Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. On September 12, 1889, Sir John A. Macdonald, the Prime Minister of Canada, a father of Confederation, and the architect of the residential schools, came to Port Hope to unveil a statue of Lieutenant Colonel Arthur T.H. Williams. Williams was a hometown hero. He fought against the Fenians prior to Confederation, and then became the commander of the Midland Battalion of Volunteers Militia. He led a decisive charge at the Battle of Batoche during the Northwest Resistance against the Métis. The resistance led to the formation of the province of Manitoba under Louis Riel, one of Canada's Fathers of Confederation after 1867. Recently, the statue has come under scrutiny on social media and during protests held in Port Hope. There are those who want the statue removed, while others argue it should be left as part of our history. I spoke with Professor David Macdonald, a political science and research leadership chair for the College of Social and Applied Human Sciences at the University of Guelph. Here is my online conversation with him. I am so pleased to welcome Professor David Macdonald. Welcome to Consider This.
Thanks very much.
Let's get right to it. Should statues and monuments of people like Lieutenant Colonel Arthur T.H. Williams in Port Hope be removed from in front of Port Hope Town Hall?
Well, my argument would be, yes, they should be removed from in front of large public buildings like that for a few reasons. One would be that, and I guess we'll get into this later, but I mean, this is obviously a statue and a figure of great historical importance for the town. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, this is something that goes back to 1889. It was unveiled by John A. Macdonald, and money was raised for the statue. So I think it has a lot of historical significance and provenance. The question, I think, more is, should it be where it is? And not should it, you know, should it be destroyed? And I would say, I don't think it should be destroyed. I think it should be, it's a very important statue historically, and it's a teaching moment, I think, for people to think about what that statue represents and the time period and the people that produced it. What I would say, though, is that I don't think it belongs in front of a town hall where elected officials are going back and forth and where taxpayer dollars are being used to maintain it. There was something about, I think, the statue was in 1954. I think there was a tornado or something, and a big tree came over and knocked the statue down. So I'm presuming that taxpayer money at that stage was used to put the statue back, and it's probably used to maintain it. So I think in part of what I've been saying in some of my writings is that ideally monuments and things like that should reflect the diversity of the country. And also the fact that Indigenous peoples have been suppressed as political actors and everything else throughout Canadian history. So it's kind of a long answer, but what I think should probably happen to the statue is that it'd be taken away from the city hall, but maybe put in the local museum or being part of the, there's a historical society I've seen in something called Dorothy's House. I don't know a whole lot about where that is exactly in relation to the city hall. But as a complete outsider to the local situation, maybe something like that would be a good option. And then school children can go and people can talk a bit about the statue, its history, what it represented then, and maybe what it represents now. So I think that the statue should be removed and moved, but I think it's of great historical importance.
Well, let's unpack that a little bit more, because, you know, what we're talking about is a location, and what are the significances of just changing the location? Why is it not better just to get rid of it entirely?
Well, that's a good question. I suppose you could get rid of it entirely. There may be people that want it to go entirely. And I think that's a perfectly valid desire to have. It may be that people that are working through, especially, I just think of the residential schools, for example. Near where I live in Guelph, there's the former Mohawk residential school. And the survivors of that residential school decided to raise money to preserve that school. They wanted it to be used as a teaching opportunity. So survivors, I've gone on numerous tours, they take people through the school, the former school. They take school kids through that school and teachers and others, and they use it to educate people about their experiences, what the Canadian government and the churches were trying to do to them. In other cases, we have residential schools being torn down by survivors, who in British Columbia, for example. And then what they've said is that it's a cathartic, important moment. And I don't want to speak in the words of survivors or anything like that. But my understanding of what they've said is that it helps to release the spirits of those who were killed in the schools, and they find that an important part of healing and moving forward. So there's no one right answer to questions about whether something should be destroyed or whether something should be preserved for teaching or other purposes. So my sense of, I guess it could be destroyed, but then I think you, and there are, I think there are different debates. I just got approached this morning by CBC Kitchener, because there's a statue of Johnny MacDonald in the town of Baden or Baden, right? And so there's a question, should that be removed or should that be destroyed? And I would say that's a different matter, because that was done in 2016. I mean, that's a new statue. The sculptor is still alive. She's still producing statues, statues of Johnny MacDonald, right? So that's a different matter, because there's not a historical provenance or significance to that. It's a newer statue. It doesn't really, all it does, I think, is represent what people in 2016 or maybe 2015 thought about Johnny MacDonald, not what someone in 1889. I mean, from what I could tell, it was quite a different matter, I think, in some ways. But it's not really up to me at all as an outsider to determine whether something should be destroyed or not. I think one of the things that I think is interesting too is if you go on the History of Port Hope website, for example, there's a picture of basically British early settlers, I suppose, rowing onto the beach, and then the town description talks a little bit about how until the first four families of English descent came, the area had been home to Aboriginal groups Huron, Iroquois, and Mississauga, attracted by salmon and sturgeon that swam in the river. But see, I'm kind of curious what happened to those indigenous peoples. I mean, I think the larger question about some of the way that history is being presented in the town and elsewhere in Ontario and Canada is to engage with that history. I mean, there were indigenous peoples there. It was a place of rich natural resources. It had historical significance to them. It's a place where they lived, where they probably traded and had houses and everything. So I'd be curious to kind of to figure out what is that history as well. I mean, part of what we've been doing at the University of Guelph as well is trying to figure out a bit more about the local indigenous history of Guelph. And it's surprising that there hasn't really been a very good way of sort of trying to figure that out. I mean, I think part of the reconciliation process, if we want to call it that, is to ask that question, what happened, that some history is being commemorated, another history isn't. So what we know is that, and I would assume from the website of Port Hope, is that there's a bit of an absence in terms of what people may or may not understand about the indigenous history of the area. And so there's a lot of discussion about the statue, but that's because you have one dominant narrative or view of history being promoted in front of a public building. And then you have another history which seems to be pretty much silent. And so, it's a tricky thing to figure out how to enable the voices that have been deliberately silenced to be put on in a balanced relationship with the voices that are, being pretty loud and pretty prominent in the middle of a prominent area of the town.
What then is the role of monuments and statues in your mind?
I've been doing a lot of thinking about this, and I wonder what the role of statues is, because it sort of means that rather than that, and I think there's something quite Western to the idea of a statue, which is that you take an individual person, and let's be honest, usually it's a white man, And part of what I looked at in the article was the fact that there's very few Black people, Indigenous people, or people of color, and very few women being commemorated. So you get a white guy, and he becomes this, and in the case of Port Hope, fairly, well, he wasn't wealthy when he went to fight in Batoche, and that was part of the backstory, I suppose, is that he was in financial trouble, but he was from a prominent family. He was a member of what, the Legislative Assembly, so he was doing pretty well. People like that become symbolic of larger movements or social forces. And I think that's problematic because I'd rather see something a bit more abstract representing the people who are involved in something, for example, or some way of representing a movement that doesn't just, it's not just like one guy, but it represents something bigger. So I think the concept of a statue is a bit problematic in our day and age because a lot of, and so I'm not saying get rid of all the statues, but I think we need to maybe think more, a little bit more about statues as being a way of representing something bigger than just one person. Because most of these people, if you talk to them now, the ones that have statues in their life, they'll say, well, it wasn't just me, I was part of a movement, or I was chosen to lead this movement, but you know, it's all about the movement or something like that. Like, so if you have something like Black Lives Matter, for example, or you have Idle No More or another big movement, they wouldn't necessarily want to have a statue of, say, the four founders of Idle No More, for example. I mean, that doesn't really encapsulate what the movement is about, which is a kind of decentralized movement of people getting together in a sort of non-hierarchical way to advocate for certain kinds of social change. So, but, you know, with academic types like me, I mean, we read lots of journal articles and books about, oh, should statues be, you know, are they outdated? Do they represent a certain kind of way of looking at history or looking at the present? But there's not probably a lot of public discussion of this stuff. A lot of things don't really leave the university community, and maybe that's a shame.
It might seem, though, that what we're doing is we're placing a 21st century lens on a 19th century person or a set of actions. How do you respond to that sort of argument when people talk about these kinds of things?
Well, I addressed that in that article I did as well, but for me, I would say, well, so what? What's the problem? Why is that bad? Because we're alive and we're voting and paying taxes or not, as the case may be, and we're making decisions, and we're, some of us, having kids and grandchildren, and we're trying to look ahead to future generations. So we live in the present and we're focused on the future. And I think it's reasonable for us to say, well, this doesn't represent where we are now and where we're going into the future. I mean, so we could have any number of things that are historical artifacts, and they might teach us about the past, but it's whether those things are really putting us into a position where we're judging how they work to judge the future, how they work for us to understand what the future should look like. The other issue is that you have to, and I think that was in the article, I'm not sure, but I kind of, you know, you could look at the history of human rights, for example, as being very much like an upside down funnel, in the sense that, you know, when a lot of these statues and things were put up, it was white landowning men who owned land and had the ability to vote or not vote, as the case may be. Women, Indigenous peoples, most people, racialized peoples, didn't really have those kinds of rights, if they could even get into the country at the time. So what we see is an expanding funnel where there are more and more voices being included in a more diverse conversation about where our society is and where it should be going. So, you know, let's say hypothetically that we had the same sorts of laws in the past as we do now, that, you know, I don't know, that everything was the same and people had the same kind of human rights, then I think we could have that conversation and debate. But it would be a different kind of conversation and a debate, because we could say certain people were not part of the national conversation because the border rules were such that they couldn't get in. Other people weren't part of the national conversation, like Indigenous peoples, because they weren't allowed to vote federally, what, until 1960? I think in some provinces it was not until the mid-60s. So what you've got is a situation where the number of voices with political power, political leverage, people allowed to be in the public spotlight are much reduced. And so when you have a conversation that includes more people, it's going to be a different conversation. And that could be in the past or now. The other thing I would say, too, is that only certain people back at that time, when that statue was put up in 1889, had the political prominence, the political power, the money to put up a statue. There might have been a lot of people who had very, very different views about that statue, who didn't have the political power or the social power or the money to exercise their own vision of what the present and the future should look like. So that's kind of where I would put it, I guess, if that makes sense.
When we talk about taking the statue down or moving it, does it not engender a false sense of righteousness? I mean, we get to say to ourselves as a community, look, we took down this statue. Look at us. We're not racist. And meanwhile, is it really dealing with systemic racism in the community?
No, no, I don't think it does at all. And I think it'd be foolish to do what, I guess, what's sometimes called virtue signaling. I think that's what people on the right talk about. It's part of a process, right? I mean, it's, you can move the statue and use it as a teachable moment to make some sense of what was going on at that time. But that doesn't stop the systematic racism. What it does do, I think, is just, there's a whole literature on what's called microaggression. So the idea that, people get triggered by seeing certain things or by treated a certain way. And I think what you do part in part by removing statues like this is that you reduce the impact, the psychological impact that a statue like that would have on indigenous peoples, for example. Or I noticed there was a Black Lives Matter small march or something like that in the town. When was it? A couple weeks ago now? Yeah. Yes. So I think statues like that are triggering because they symbolize something. They symbolize that certain kinds of sort of white privilege, if you want to call it that, are normalized and seen as acceptable. So it's a signal that this stuff is okay. If it's in front of the town hall, like let's say you're an indigenous person or a black person or an Indian person and you're elected to the council and you've got to walk by that statue every day. You've got to walk by a statue of Johnny MacDonald. It does send a signal to you that the institution that you're going into has normalized certain views of the past and has also chosen to normalize those views into the present. So I think there's those issues involved.
Well, then how do we have conversations or talk about historic figures? I mean, you mentioned Sir John A. and we're talking about Colonel Williams. When we start to talk about someone like John A., for example, he was an incredibly complex man. I mean, he was a political genius in the minds of some. He was a strong leader. He was a successful politician, yet he drank like a fish. He was incredibly irresponsible. He'd go missing for days at critical times. He did not manage his personal finances very well. And he also was the architect of residential schools and other policies that targeted indigenous people in Canada. So how do we start to talk about this in a way that doesn't take away from both the strengths of individuals, but also the challenges of what they did as well?
Well, I mean, it's a tricky question, isn't it? I mean, I suppose it's what we want to distill out of MacDonald's legacy. But I suppose it depends on who the we is as well. I mean, I think part of this issue is the idea that there is, and this comes back to some political science stuff, but it's the idea that there's one way of looking at what the country represents. There's one kind of identity of the country. And we all need to come around, whatever the federal or provincial government or the town hall or whatever says is that one right way. If you go into the, certainly during Stephen Harper's time as prime minister, there was this idea that there should be a unifying narrative that either you agree with it, and if the majority agree, then that's what's acceptable. But if you don't agree, then you should just kind of keep quiet about it. And I think maybe part of what this whole process is about is saying, okay, yeah, people are complex, but countries are complex too. They're more like sausages that you don't really want to, you know, you might not want to know how they're put together, but maybe in an age when you care about your diet, you want to know how the sausage is put together. And maybe there's some good stuff in the sausage and maybe there's some bad stuff in the sausage. You might enjoy it, but you know, maybe you want to know exactly what you're getting yourself into. So what I'm saying is that there's multiple ways of looking at history. And I think part of the backlash in the US and Canada and elsewhere about these statues is that this has been presented as being official history. In other words, the government or whoever's putting up this thing is saying, we claim to speak for everybody. This is the official view of something. It's official because it's in front of the town hall, or it's official because we've named a school after this guy, you know? So you got to take it. You can't leave it and you can't change it. You've just got to take it. And that's I think part of the reaction is like, why do we have to take it? Why does there have to be an official history that silences and denigrates certain groups? Why is the state advancing certain interests in certain people and not the interests of others? So I think that's, you know, if that makes sense, that's kind of it. So yeah, John A. had his, you know, his positive side, I guess. I mean, you know, you're right. He was a successful politician. He did engineer the building of the railroad. He did many things. But it is a question of whether we want to commemorate him in ways that normalize and also officially endorse what he represented. And I think we can historicize him and we can learn about him. But let's say the statue in Baden, for example, which was done in 2016. The sculptor was interviewed and said recently, well, I think that I can see John A. MacDonald has done some, you know, some negative things as well. It was something to that effect. I don't recall the specific wording of it. But I mean, that was only like, what, 4 years ago that the thing was put up. And he looks good. I mean, he's tall, he's slightly bigger than life as far as I can see. He's got his nice frock coat on, a pair of shiny boots. He's got a couple of chairs so people can come and sit down and chat with him. He's not being shown as a balanced figure. There's not a positive and negative aspect to the guy. We're not seeing his warts. He's not holding a bottle of rum. And he's not, you know, there's not an indigenous person, you know, something bad happening to that person. He's not stealing people's land or doing other things like that. He just looks like a nice, highly respectable guy. I think the question with the statues and the monuments is, are you going to represent and commemorate someone in a balanced way, or are you going to just represent them in a super positive way? And if you're just doing it in a super positive way, then you're ignoring the negative stuff that makes someone a human being. But it's also the negative stuff that has been ignored and suppressed in history. So
it's interesting because you mentioned in your remarks about national identity and how national identities are formed. Does this kind of debate rip us apart more than it unites us? And, you know, we live in such a fragmented world. We're siloed through technology and other means. And, you know, politicians and other leaders use these kinds of debates in our society to manipulate us. How does having this discussion help create or help solidify or strengthen our national identity?
Well, I think, you know, and I'm going to be controversial here in saying that the national identity has never been unified. And that the way you present the illusion of a national identity being unified is you suppress people that don't agree with it. You know, it's like you buy an old car and someone has taken a lot of spot putty and has spot puttied it up and then has gone to Canadian Tire and bought themselves a lot of nice primer and then maybe they have an airbrush and then they airbrush it out. And you look at that car and you think, wow, it looks great. But the reality is that car is full of dents and holes and it's rusty, but you can't see it. And so you take it out on the highway and those flaws are going to start to appear. And this is what we're seeing now is that these cleavages have always been there. There's always been people in Quebec, for example, who've wanted their own state and society, who feel colonized by the British. There's always been Indigenous peoples asserting their sovereign right to act as political actors. There's always been Indigenous people saying, well, we signed treaty, and the treaty that we agreed to means this and not at all what the government has said. And that's been affirmed by the Supreme Court. There's a lot of different groups in society that do not go along with the dominant narrative. And they always haven't. I mean, the Riel's uprising was precisely about that very fact, that people didn't agree. So the idea that you can create an illusion of national unity is usually done at the expense of people that don't agree with that illusion. Now, for most people, I suppose, who are sort of European origin, that's okay, because they don't really have a problem with that. But if you're not of that particular origin, then it's very difficult to go along with that. I mean, you are going to have different kinds of questions about things.
If you were to be sitting down with a group of residents in Port Hope, how would you encourage them to discuss this?
Well, I think it might be to sit down and say, as a society right now, what are our strengths and weaknesses? And when we think about our children, our grandchildren, our nieces and nephews, people that we know in our community, what do we want them to think about this place right now and going forward? And, brainstorm it out. What does this community actually mean? And what do we want visitors to the community? Because I think it's being used for film sets and stuff. So it's obviously looks like a beautiful town. What do we want people to think about our town going forward? And then on that basis, think about your values that you have now and what you want to represent, for your children and grandchildren. And maybe those are the values that you should base your ideas of representation on as well. So if that statue being there says we represent certain things, and that stuff that was in the past it's the same as now, then I guess, that's something that the town will have to defend. But, if they want to change that, then, maybe the statue should be moved. There's a big thing about Farley Mowat as well. So, I think there's a statue of him on the river. And, so I don't know, maybe this statue could go by the river. I don't know, it could go somewhere else. The other thing, though, is to also think about why are we here? And I think there's a sense for, like, if I can use the term settler Canadians, to just assume that Canada's kind of always sort of been there in some way. Like, we know it wasn't. I mean, we celebrate, say, the 150th anniversary of Canada or something like that. But there is a sense that we kind of naturalize and normalize what exists now. And I think part of the conversation that the town could have is say, well, why does the town look the way it does? Why do people speak English in this town? Why do we have sort of Victorian style architecture in the town? Why are we commemorating this guy in front of our city hall, for example? What happened to all these Indigenous people that we talk about on the website? And the first four families came, and then all these Indigenous peoples, I don't know, they just don't seem to be around so much anymore in terms of how the town is commemorated. Like, were they still there? Did they still live in the town? It sort of seems like maybe they went away somewhere, or maybe something happened to them. So these are the kinds of questions I think it's appropriate for the town to maybe have. And then if these people left or were driven away, or maybe they were the original founders of the community, I mean, the river is still named a name that they gave the river. I mean, maybe their history and presence on the land should be better engaged with. So these are the kinds of questions I think. I don't think they're questions that people would necessarily be offended by. And I don't think they're politically correct questions. I think what they are questions about identity, and not maybe taking everything for granted, like things are this way, and so therefore they have to stay that way, and they've always been that way. But to say, let's start thinking a bit more about change and how we exist in a changing world, what we want the town to look like, and maybe things that are pretty cool about the history of the area that we just don't know about, and that would actually add to the identity and make a richer identity for the town that isn't just maybe so British oriented, but also, more Indigenous oriented and grounded in the earlier history of the region.
Professor MacDonald, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
I want to thank both my guests this week for talking to me. and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca, or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.